talk about it.
Cool.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the A-List with me, Jennifer Lindsay. Every week, we chat with an influencer to see what makes them tick. And today, Wednesday, December 2nd, 2009, I am delighted to be joined by Christopher Coppola, founder and chairman of Project Accessible Hollywood, among his many other accomplishments. Welcome, Christopher.
I'm very happy to be here.
I'm thrilled you could make it. I want to first let people know about Project Accessible Hollywood, otherwise known as PAW, and the festivals that go with them that are known as PAW Fest. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is for the uninitiated?
Yeah, I really like mixing old school with new school, and I find it very refreshing to hear the stories of the people, which we all are. I call them the everyday people, and obviously we are all everyday people, but I like the idea of using new school technology that is accessible to everybody, you know, flip cameras, cell phones that have video enabled cell phones, reasonably priced HD cameras that anybody can get at a Walmart or a Target, and put them in the hands of the everyday person, and bring in some old school Hollywood types to work with them, coach them, to help them tell their stories their way, not actually tell them this is how you do it, which a lot of film schools do, but say, you know, let us help you tell the story. You're a plumber, you know, here's a camera. We'll tell you what we do, and make suggestions, but you go out there and do it yourself. And that's how this all started, is that I found it so refreshing to see real stories from real people, real creativity, and often what you find, I should say sincere organic creativity, because often what you find in a lot of the Hollywood scene and in film schools is that people have to pretend they're something they're not. They have to learn how to make a George Lucas film, or they have to, you know, show that they can really light something a certain way. And what gets lost is the actual person doing it and what makes them unique, and the actual story and the organic sincerity of the story. And, I'm at the Directors Guild, and I have to see a lot of student films, and, I'm bored because, they look great. You know, the lighting's wonderful. You know how to put makeup on the actress, but there's nothing there. And then when I see some little girl from, high school girl from Albuquerque, doing a little piece about her father passing away, I'm bawling. And it's good both ways, because you're showing these people that these tools are out there to really communicate your stories and respect that and take it seriously. It's magic. And at the same time, for the Hollywood people who kind of get involved, the so-called professionals, they're like, wow, I lost touch of that. I got jaded. I've been in the business for 30 years, and it's magical. I need to go back to that. And so all this is what PA is. We go around, we've been doing it now for 3 years. We've been around the country. We've done a few internationally. We're hoping to do a lot more internationally. But it's the only type of festival where it's a real-world cyber world like it, where we actually go into communities, small towns, big cities, for a week or a weekend. We bring the equipment. We make a big festivity out of it. It's a creative process. None of the content existed before we came in. And, we're all sharing in the creative process. And then everything goes up online at the PAH Nation, PAHNation.org, and people around the world who can see it and vote on it, comment on it. Prior PAH contestants from other lands we've been to stay engaged. And it's wonderful, because it's really putting a human face to the cyber world, because we're actually there. We know who made these things. And often in the cyber world, you don't know who you're talking to. I know who I'm talking to with you, but a lot of times you have no idea, and there's a real disconnect between the human spirit and the human being and what you're actually doing in the cyber world. And it controls you, and people do not engage or deal with their fellow man. They'd rather be locked up in a room and pretending they're dealing with people, because it's safer. I've actually had people tell me that they'd rather premiere their their films or their artwork, on Second Life because they don't have to deal with anybody. I'm like, well, why would you want to do that? So the whole point that I'm trying to do is, have people connect in the real world and share it online. It's a whole different approach, and I think people really like that. They really respond to it. It feels healthy, get out in the fresh air and really respect the creative process and really find out that you have all these great things inside yourself that we all do, and you're not second class. You're not someone just draining through the cracks. You're important. And I love celebrating that, and that's why.
I love the whole concept of not only democratization of the internet, but I wrote a note on Facebook actually that kind of relates to this. But I feel so right on with you about things becoming more virtual, and I mean that, I make my living at that. So I made the shift a long time ago to doing television news, for example, in the online space, and you feel this increasing disconnection.
Right.
And there's also that piece, and you invited me, and I thank you so much for the experience to judge the last PawFest that just happened in late October, beginning of November, and I was so moved. There were pieces in the Circus Vision section with children. They were given certain themes to chat around, and just the whole concept of these kids being able and just seeing kind of their organic responses was amazing.
Yeah, and, that's the beauty of technology, that it really is a tool. We're not just plugged in by it. It can really be used in a way to tap into our inner selves and actually not just be plugged in. And there's such a disconnect between generations now. Kids are born already knowing how to play Xbox. Things like that are just unreal. And it's both fascinating. At the same time, it's also pretty scary. And so I always try to mix that old school with the new school. And I've been asked and I wish this festival actually happened, but it was a Native American. I really love and really respect the whole Native American wisdom. And actually they love, the internet was big to them because it was a great equalizer. But there's the highest rate of teen suicide is in the Native American community.
Yeah.
And there's reasons for that because, there's a real disconnect between their spiritualism and the elders and the young people who basically want to be, I hate to say it, but like little white kids with all their technology and to feel like a somebody. And you see this with billboards around, if you don't own a Mercedes, you're a nobody. And if you don't have a, iPhone, you're a nobody. And it's just the way the marketing materialistic world is. So for the Native Americans, if they don't have this stuff, they don't count. And yet at the same time, there's this deep religious spiritualism that they're no longer tapped into. So they asked me, what would you do? How would Pa get involved with something? I said, well, it's easy. Give all these kids, an iPhone, a new one with the video capability on it, or, some fancy smartphone, and they get it in their hands. They think, oh, I'm a somebody. I got the same thing Joe down the street, who's not on the reservation has, and now I got one. But then you give them a contest where they have to go up on the hill where the elders are, and they have to make a little piece. They have to do a little documentary or a little creative piece with one of the elders. And the beauty of that is it's not so much that that there's a piece, it's just that they're engaging and they're creating something together with the elder and the youth. And it just so happens at the end of it, there's a piece that they can share and look at. And that's a very healing concept. And that's immediate. So with a lot of this technology, you can use it in that way, and it's an immediate heal, an immediate thing to grow from. And that's what I try to do. I personally, I'm not really into technology. I'd rather be on my motorcycle with my cat and go fishing,
Do you really put your cat on a motorcycle?
Yeah. He's biker cat. Actually, it's been airing a lot on Cats 101 on Animal Planet, but you can see him.
Oh, my God. I gotta see this.
He rides. It's his idea. He jumped
awesome.
On the bike, He's a biker.
I used to drive with my cat all the time. Wow.
People
thought I was weird. I'm like, hey, this is normal.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, he goes in the car, but I mean, it's just, it takes it another step further when you're wearing goggles at the front of a bike and going for a ride, you know.
Yeah,
but I mean, my point is that I'm not really, you know, a guy that is like a techie in any way. I need to know about it, and I use it as a tool, and I completely respect it, you know. I mean, you know, Francis, who's my uncle, you know, he started a lot of this and back in the 80s, what he called electronic cinema, and his whole reason for doing that was that it was a great equalizer and it was a chance for other people to create and make films and share. And he made that statement that one day, and he can't stand it that he keeps hearing this, but I'm sure it keeps getting transmutated in terms of what he actually said. But he said one day we're going to look at the little girl in Idaho's film and not the big Hollywood film. And that was way before YouTube existed. So obviously there's some truth to that. I'm in some ways using my knowledge of what I learned from him and my art background and my philosophical background to try to carry the torch. You know, now that we have all these tools, now that there's easy access, let's not just, you know, throw it away. Let's take it serious. You know, I mean, you know, YouTube's got some great stuff and you can find wonderful stuff, but you do have to go through a lot of junk. Like, I don't know how many more, you know, films I can see on there of a mother feeding their baby corn mush. You know, like, what was that? You know, is that,
or do we really need to see Tila Tequila melting down on YouTube?
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
why not take
Ustream.
Yeah. Why not take the fact that you could do this stuff seriously? Why not respect it? Why not cherish it? And that's the other thing that PA does, is we come into communities and we get you to think. You know, who are you? How do you view things? What's your community about? And, you know, it's your way of telling it, but, you know, it's a week of focus, and that's why we say think it, shoot it, share it. You know, it's important to do that. So that's why
it's awesome.
I do it.
It's really, really awesome, and it's wonderful to hear part of the journey aspect of how you got to where you are. But I wanted to turn to something that I saw you post on Twitter a few weeks ago on a shoot that you did. I think it was in Bakersfield, and it really touched me, and actually your post made me cry a little bit, you know, just because, you know, I'm kind of a bleeding heart anyway, you know, Peace Corps, you know, that kind of person. So,
it
doesn't take much. My mom's actually a social worker, and she, you know, the Native American community, I can attest from personal experience going with her to, you know, these places where they've got all this casino money coming in and yet extreme poverty, and there is such story there. And they were here first and all those kinds of things. But I really wanted to kind of get to the, you know, all of, you know, there's so many touching experiences once you start getting into it. And I'm curious, what sort of touched you the most? Because I sense that you're sort of a sensitive soul like I am, or maybe you would phrase it a different way, but you care, right? So
yeah, I care. I think one of the things that really I feel good about and I'm proud of is I'm not judgmental. You know, a lot of people say, well, are you political about why do you do these things? I said, no, I just like people. And, you know, it's been suggested to me, like, you know, from other nonprofits, well, why don't you give the cameras to a bunch of kids that have a drug problem and we can use it and say, how can we clean this up? And I said, well, who's to say these kids might not tell the most beautiful story of all time? I mean, I don't give these kids a camera to say they have a drug problem. You know, that's not what I'm about. And, you know, I can sit at a table and have, like, the most conservative, hardcore, you know, farmer at the table and the most, you know, liberal, communist, you know, chef at the table, and we all get along because we always find this common ground. And I love that. Like, Fest, there was a really nice piece done about mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers, but it happened to be that they were all illegal immigrants. But that's not what interested me about it. It was the fact that it was about mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers. And so when they did the piece, they decided in their own way to go real political with it. Well, that's their choice, you know, and we don't tell you how to do it. We just tell you to make sure you can communicate your story to as many people as possible. And then afterwards, they, you know, wanted to go with a bigger project with it, and which is great because they felt, you know, impassioned about, you know, doing a larger form and what their story was, which I think is always wonderful, and I feel really good that they carried on their creativity. But then they wanted me to go on CNN to make some statement about my views on the illegal immigrants. And I said, you know, absolutely not. I mean, I have my own views, but I mean, if a four hardcore truckers that, you know, have a problem with, you know, ultra-liberalism, but that's, you know, their stories about trucking and, you know, surviving in a dust storm, and they want to share that, they'd get the same attention that, you know, I would give the story about the illegal immigrants. And that is what I like about myself. And I see in a lot of ways that heals, that, you know, gets us all to the table. I've had, you know, people come up to me feeling, you know, comfortable being with other people that they didn't feel they would, you know, like, you know, because of, you know, the face value right off the bat. And I'm like, you know, you don't judge anybody. You know, this is, you know, we're all at the table, you know, and as long as we treat each other with respect and grace and politeness, you know, we can always find a middle ground. And that's important. And that's what I enjoy the most about what I've been doing in my life. Look, I can go anywhere. You know, I've been in, you know, hardcore jails, you know, with a bunch of murderers, and enjoying my discussions and talk with them and find them quite enlightening. And I've been in a room with some very intense artists and I didn't like any of them, you know, because they were snooty and snobby. So, you know, it depends, you know, I like to go to the table with a clean slate, and I like to give everybody, you know, what they are. You know, they're human beings, and I do that wherever I go, and I tend to, you know, I rub off on them, and they rub off on me, and I, in some ways, I turn that into a meal. You know, I invent dishes where I you know, I'm like a social alchemist. You know, we all get together, and I learn from them, and I make a concoction, and we eat it together, we celebrate, we break bread, and you know, that aspect of me I've noticed has touched a lot of people, and you know, I'm humble about it. It's nothing, I'm sincere about it, and you never want to take it to a degree where it's no longer sincere, because it, you know, that happens a lot with a lot of people, and I don't feel that'll happen with me, because I've been doing this for so long and I'm really touched. You know, it's more the people that are touching me and I'm so proud and happy when they come to me and say, hey, you know, that was meaningful. You know, I really appreciate that. And especially when they go off on their own and continue it, you know, so that's probably the most exciting thing for me right now, is that a lot of that is happening. You know, I'm the guy that brought art to Walmart, you know, I mean, a lot of people criticize.
That'll be your tagline for eternity.
Yeah, I brought art to Walmart. And, you know, and it was at a time when Walmart, and I'm sure a lot of people still think that, is the evil empire. And, you know, and I understand, you know, where that comes from in terms of the mom and pop stores getting absorbed. And, you know, but you're not going to stop the machine. You got to go in and you got to deal with it, and you got to be diplomatic and you know, dealing with the brave new world. Things constantly change. And but I, you know, the idea of bringing art to Walmart and to me was important, because, you know, art is something that is really, we all have it, and it's all being kind of cut out of all the public schools, and it's the first thing to go. And it's something that we need more than anything, you know, we need math and all this stuff, but art is like the oldest thing inside us since painting on the walls as cavemen. It's something that we need to have. Otherwise, that's why I say, you know, art is like toothpaste. Without it, your soul decays. So it was perfect for me to do something with Walmart. And Walmart was cool. They said, as long as, you know, it doesn't offend anybody, you know, we can't have this, we can't have that, you know, but you guys do what you have to do. And they wanted to sell basically, you know, HD monitors. And so it was good for them, because we were going in with some pretty fancy HD equipment. But, you know, it really was about the creative process. And I took a little flack from some artists saying, how dare you, you know, do something like this with Walmart. And I said, well, let's look at that. Okay. Now, you make a painting, and you know, maybe it gets in a gallery in San Francisco. I know quite a few of them, and it goes up, and you know, maybe 25 people show up with their champagne glasses, and a lot of them look at the painting, and you know, some of them really do understand it, want to talk about it. Most of them just want to be seen, and maybe end up in the Herb Kane, which is not happening, you know, gossip column. But you know, maybe one or two buy it, but I'm talking about doing something that is, you know, 500 million people a month are going to look at art. So we're just going to put, you know, that and do it in a way that is very down to earth, you know, not Hallmark, even still very, you know, creative and thoughtful, but, you know, something that is meaningful. What is going to put art back in the public schools? I think that will. And then they said, well, you know, Christopher, isn't that censorship because they can't just do what they want? And I said, well, nothing exists beforehand. I mean, if I gave you a canvas 2 inches by 2 inches and paid you $5,000 to do a portrait, you could say yes or no.
Yeah.
You could say no. So it's not censorship. But things like that, the fact that I can go and see those things and actually make it actually happen is incredibly rewarding to me. And the main thing is because I mean it, you know. I think it's important to do. And
you're shooting a lot of these really incredible stories. You know, like I said, you know, I saw the post that you put on Facebook where you had went and shot something that touched you, and told a little bit, just gave an insight into what, you know, you experienced, and it was so, you know, it was just kind of this epiphany of like, wow, you know, here, you know, and that was around things that could be politicized too, and I think about, you know, two different Moby flicks that were in the competition for PawFest Hollywood 2009. One was The Street Vendors of MacArthur Park.
Right.
Where that one tells you the political story, and there's nothing political about it. But it's you know, basically, I would imagine, and you know, the folks in the story tell you this, that, you know, it's mostly illegal immigrants selling wares in MacArthur Park in Los Angeles to make money because they can't make money other ways or because this is the more effective way. And one even compared it to the way things are in Mexico to some extent.
Right.
In terms of who gets what spot. And, you know, it completely gives you that on-the-ground view of what's really happening. And it can be right in your neighborhood. The other was the couches. I love the L.A. couches story. So that there's this and it's really hard to explain, so please – everyone, go to pawnation.org. It's pahnation.org. And take a look at PawFest Hollywood 2009. So the other one was L.A. couches. And I think we've all seen them. You know, you drive through L.A. and you see couches, right? And you're like, why are these abandoned couches out there? And you don't really think much of it. But somebody actually went and kind of gave a personality to these abandoned couches as though they were like an entity, like a person. You know, it was a personification. And it was done so artfully. They actually had this, you know, screen at the end that told you how many couches are abandoned every month in, I think, L.A. County and, you know, that, you know, some other statistic that I can't remember at the moment. But, I think they love that.
Yeah, they saw in that one day of shooting, I mean, they found like 70 couches or something just laying there in different parts of the – it's funny. I mean, I'm always seeing them. I just saw one yesterday. Like, why is that? You know, why? It's an L.A. thing, you know, and that is a story that – you know, and for the MacArthur Park thing, I mean, I liked it more because that's a community that has been there forever, and a lot of people don't know about it. You know, and it's a real old LA neighborhood, and this stuff is going on, but it's about the people. You know, like when the woman's crying about her son being killed, and she's working
awful
there. Yeah, it's awful, but it gives you this kind of, you know, pride about being human.
She was hopeful. She was the most hopeful.
Yeah.
That was the thing that I loved, and I know we're getting really specific into the piece. Hopefully this encourages everyone listening to go to the site. But, I mean, you know, that was the thing that struck me that, you know, here she is with this story about her son dying, and, you know, it was just, and yet she was the most hopeful person in the piece.
Exactly, right.
And,
right,
you know, and she was wearing, you know, just in her facial expressions and the way she looked, she was wearing that you know, the horrors of her life or the things that have been bad. And, you know, and you could, you know, just seeing that was so powerful. And that's where the digital empowerment piece really comes in, because if I just heard her, I wouldn't get completely the story. I had to see her.
You have to see her.
Yeah, and that's a huge, huge piece of this.
Right. It is.
I mean,
it's the new, I mean, you know, it is, I mean, I love the written word as well, and actually in the very beginning it wasn't the written word, it was storytelling, and you know, and there's some, and I'm sure you've read about this, these really ancient tribes, I think even the Aborigines, but they don't write anything down. It's shared stories, and it's incredible. And in some ways, with our visual, you know, media now, and people being so, you know, being able to do it themselves, we're kind of going through that again. And it's a different syntax. It's definitely more modern, but we're sharing, you know, ourselves, our stories, and they're almost like, I call them, like, you know, documenting the history of now. They're imprints that can all be interconnected, and that's a healthy thing. But the most important thing is to really respect and not take for granted that creative process and what you're doing. Take some time, you know, really think about yourself, and that's going to make us, I always say, getting out of level one. It's like, you know, you look at the 2001 film and the caveman throws the bone up in the air and it turns into a spaceship. Well, there's no middle ground there. It's essentially, you know, we're still in that level one and now we got these spaceships, but there's so much more than that. And so, like, it's time to get to level two. And that's what I like. I like this possibility that we can actually have a renaissance by using this digital technology.
Absolutely.
You know, that makes me happy.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, when I was, as an undergrad, I took, you know, I'm part Portuguese, so I took a lot of classes in Portuguese and Spanish cultures and the oral traditions that go along with them. And with Portuguese people that immigrate to this country, and this is true of other nationalities as well, their oral history gets lost because of, you know, it has to do with skin tone and all of that, but they're told to blend. And
right.
It's so true with, like, my great grandparents. It was all about blending. You want to, you know, my grandfather was the lightest, and my mother, her mother was French, so she was very light. And so my great grandfather used to call her Frenchie, you know, because that was good because she would blend, right? And so all that oral history and tradition, my mom could actually speak Portuguese and read letters from Portugal to my great grandmother because she took Latin in school. She didn't even really know what she was saying, but in the process, learned Portuguese. So, you know, there was this really nice connection, but otherwise Portuguese culture in this country gets lost. There was an
Let me just ask you, do you love sardines? Are you like a, you know, that's when I was in Portugal, I was in Setúbal, and it was incredible. I got the best, they sardines was huge. You know, barbecue sardines and the whole thing.
I lived in Sweden for a while, so I think it's safe to say that pretty much any form of fish I will eat and like it. But I mean, there are these you know, all these cultures that make up our country,
right.
And others that are oral, and so they get captured in these new storytelling formats, and I think that's really exciting. That's a whole other aspect to this.
Yeah, well, that's what I also love about PA, is that, you know, I was in Slovenia and doing a mini PA there where you had to do a digi-portrait or, you know, a cell phone art piece. You can go to the website and see what the different, you know, contests are. But, you know, there would be a fisherman, you know, from Slovenia, which is the town, what was the town called? So much on my mind lately. It's right across from Trieste. But anyhow, these were, you know, fishermen. The town was mainly built around fishing, and you gave them a cell phone. They would go out and tell a story. And then, you know, we went to northern Nevada to Elko, where the cowboy poets are, and then they would tell a story, and it's all online. So suddenly you got a cowboy poet, you know, looking at a Slovenian fisherman and, you know, finding some connection and talking, and that's exciting.
Awesome.
We all have different, you know, cultures and histories, which should always be celebrated and cherished, but at the same time, we're all part of this, you know, mosaic, and we're similar, and so that's the other aspect of it that I like.
Yeah, I think that's great. I want to get in another question because we don't have a lot of time. One of the things that I think about is, you know, you're busy with your own projects, right? The thing, the bread and butter that, you know, brings it to the table.
Yeah, I gotta make cash, right?
Gotta make cash. How do you fit
cash
that
is
in?
Good. Cash is good. You gotta make cash.
Yeah, you do. But how do you fit that in with the PA effort, which, you know, clearly is a, you know, not only just something you do that's great for others, but something that you engage in and are and love too.
Well, that's a very good question, and actually, I take a lot of flack for that because I have a great group of people that I work with and a great business partner and really believes in PA, but you know, feels I'm spending too much time on it because I'm not making enough cash for the overall company. But I look at it as that it all goes together. I mean, I'm developing a brand, or the brand is developing me, and the brand is a human brand. It's a celebrating, you know, humanity and all our, you know, our differences and our similarities, and, you know, everything I do has a little bit of a, you know, has that in it. You know, my biker chef at the Cat is all about celebrating people, you know, in towns and making a meal. My Spices of Life TV is about, you know, really like celebrating, you know, with me in there and how people rub off on me, and I learn from them and they learn from me. There's a sense of humor. The Walmart thing was definitely very, you know, a human tale. You know, taking the so-called little guy and putting him on a pedestal, when in reality, you know, they were already on a pedestal and we should learn from them, you know. But everything I do is like that. So it is sort of it's a brand. And now people come to my company and me for ideas that fit, you know, that are part of my brand. I mean, an example would be, and I haven't done this yet, but this is an example, is a, you know, a insurance company said, we're looking for some new media, because a lot of people are doing this now, like webisodes and, you know, something that could be put on. Yeah, be put on cell phones that, you know, can kind of, you know, get people to think about not suing right off the bat. And I'm like, well, you know, that's an interesting dilemma. You know, I mean, first of all, people don't like big corporations because you've screwed a lot of people. So you got to understand that that exists. And you know, but the thing is that you can't belittle them. A lot of times I've seen these commercials belittling people, like the whole, you know, Q-tip thing where people were suing Johnson & Johnson, so the Q-tip guy came out and showed you how to clean your ear and treated everybody like they were a baby. And I'm saying, that's not the way to do it. The way to do it is to create some content that gets people to think about what it means to be a responsible citizen, what it means to be the buck stops here, and make them feel good about that, and create a story around that. And it's going back to some basic roots. It's a little subliminal because you're getting people to think. By thinking in that way, they might not do a lawsuit right for money. But these are basic things that we have on the dark side of humanity, is greed and all this kind of stuff. But as long as you can tell stories that balance it out and do it in a way that make the people want that, that make them want to engage in that and feel good about themselves, that's the kind of content. There's no judgment, always trying to figure it out, but try to create content that, you know, makes people feel good about themselves. Gives them a sense that there's more that they can do, that and they have the power to do it. And that's what I like. I like that people come to me looking for this kind of stuff. I mean, it's hard because sometimes I get like some crazy things, you know, and if I could, you know, I've been asked to be a host because I have this whole biker look. I've been asked to be a host on, you know, and it would have been a lot of money, but on a lowrider, you know, babes in bikini, you know, reality show. And I said, you know, I have no problem with lowrider cars. They're cool. And, you know, obviously babes in bikinis, that there's a place for that. But I can't do that. You know, I wouldn't do that because it's not, you know, it's not who I am. It'd be like a selling out brand. And at the same time, it would be a lot of money. So you have to be very, you know, you got to find the right thing. And it's difficult. You know, I mean, it's very difficult.
Yeah, it sounds like integrity is like a huge piece of you as a person. And
right.
I'm wondering how much you feel you need I guess I should back up. So I have had many chances to live in Los Angeles, and when I've gone down to actually do the deal, I always say, you know what, I can't find a way to live here that would make me happy, because
right.
I feel like I would be too self-aware all the time, because I do
right.
tend to do that anyway.
Right.
So do you feel that you need to travel to help with your creative process? Because you are definitely, you know, integrity and sort of the truth is very much part of who you are, which almost seems antithetical, and maybe I'm completely wrong on this, but it seems a bit antithetical to living in Los Angeles, right?
Well, I think you're a little wrong with that. I mean, I grew up here. I was born here. I actually really love Los Angeles. Hollywood, which is a very small part of Los Angeles, definitely. You know, definitely. I mean, the fact that you can go into any laundromat in Hollywood and see someone reading a script is annoying, you know. But, you know, it just is. But you know, L.A. is the big orange. You know, it's a much bigger town than Hollywood, and it's a very good work ethic. It's very blue-collar. And, you know, when you make a deal, the deal's done. There's beautiful pockets of communities. It's one of the most diverse cities. You just have to drive through some ugly stuff to get there. And I like that, too. You know, you got to go through a little hell to find some heaven. And it's definitely my town, you know. And yes, I do travel a lot. And I like traveling, but it's funny because my wife likes traveling more than me, but I seem to travel more than her. I'm kind of a homebody, so everywhere I go, I like to bring my little espresso maker and a couple things, so I make it feel like I still got my
you
home.
You need to
with
bring
me.
Her with you. What are you talking about?
I do. Sometimes she comes, but, you know, we have the family, and we have, you know, another baby now who's 15 months, so
aww,
it's not easy.
Congrats.
Yeah, thank you. But anyhow, that you know, it's funny. I went to school in San Francisco, and you know, I love San Francisco. I like having both, you know, San Francisco and LA in the same state because I go back and forth. The thing about San Francisco for me is it's kind of provincial. You know, it's a little bit of small townish, and it's hard to get lost. You know, it's hard. People seem to know right away what you're doing, and in LA, I like getting lost. You know, I like just being anonymous. But you know, it's not true in Hollywood. In Hollywood, you know, you walk around and go, oh, yeah, they're so-and-so. You know, this just happened to me. And actually, it was kind of cool. You know, I'm not going to say it wasn't flattering. But, you know, those really annoying big double-decker buses that, you know, going out to look at stars, homes and stuff that drive around. Okay, so I'm walking down Fairfax with my son, Bailey, who's a teenager. And suddenly I hear, hey, there's Christopher Coppola. And it's a loud sound. Like, what's going on? And it's one of those buses going down Fairfax. And they said, why are we doing that? I don't know. I guess maybe they saw something. Maybe somebody I know on the bus. It was a funny moment. You know, I just said, wow. You know, I'm somebody now. A freaking double-decker English bus, you know, came back and said, hey, there's Christopher Coppola. And everybody started waving. I'm like, okay. I made it. I have made it.
Whether you want to or not, you've made
it. I've made
it. What did Bailey think of it?
You know, he was a little embarrassed, you know, but at the same time, he kind of thought it was cool. But, you know, he's the kind of kid, like, he doesn't like people knowing his name, because I was like that, too. He doesn't like people knowing who he's related to, and even when he was really young, you know, when people knew him and he would see how they would act to him differently than, say, the kid in the corner, he would rather hang out with the kid in the corner, you know, and that's true with me as well. Like, I don't judge it. It's human nature. I mean, people love celebrity. I think it's a little overboard, but I think it's always kind of been that way. And my whole thing is, how do you use that energy? I mean, you know, how do you use it? I'm in an interesting situation because I'm related to so many famous people and talented people, and you know, I'm an interesting situation because I can use that in ways that help me do what I do in a positive way, because I have definitely an educational vibe, and I'm not goal oriented, I'm more process oriented, which is what makes me who I am. But I'm in an interesting situation because it's not too many people that can be in that situation and have a name that immediately opens doors, and I don't take that for granted. And I think my son's like that too. He doesn't want it to be easy. He doesn't want, like, immediately, you know, people just like him because of who he's related to. It annoys him. So at the same time, when the bus came down and mentioned my name, it was like, oh, God, you know, please don't say that's going to happen all the time. I go, no, I'm sure the bus driver, somebody that worked on one of my films a long time ago, and now they're having to drive a bus around because it's so hard to get work, you know. So let's not take it too far.
Yeah, I totally get it. Hey, I before, you know, we part, because we've got probably time for one more question.
I'm going to start crying now. What do you mean we part? We're parting. Okay.
We're going to have to part at
some point.
You're welcome to come on my show every week. You've got, like, great stuff to share. But
yeah, thank you.
And I have some people that have tweeted in questions, and I'm sorry that we didn't get to them because we talked a lot about Paw. I really want people to go to pawnation.org.
Okay.
They've got to go. But I want to know, you know, you've recently had some, you've had a major loss in your life, and you do come from this amazing family. I don't want to reference it a lot because I feel like you are your own person and do these amazing things. So, feel free to reference how you want, because I know your father passed away.
Yeah,
there's an auditorium here in San Francisco that is named for him. So he's
right.
You know, and the name Coppola is very connected. But you know, it would piss me off if you know, so many things that were written about him were Nick Cage's brother. Well,
if you follow the Facebook, I went public with that because I knew in 48 hours it was going to be like a media circus. And
I was surprised it held that long, actually.
Yeah, well, it was interesting. Yeah, I think partly because they were waiting till my brother was back in the States or something. But it gave me a moment, like a one-on-one, just to talk about, you know, him as a man and how important he was to the rest of us and what I learned from him. I mean, there's good and bad. Everybody has to deal with that sometimes. Mm-hmm. When you're you know, you're in your head a lot, you know, you're different, you know, and you have to understand that. I mean, it's all educational, it's all this, but you might not have that, you know, that Pop-Tart in the drawer that you might want because it's not being thought of because it's all intellectual. So there's
right.
that aspect of it. You know, I kind of could have used a few more Scooter Pies as a kid, you know, that kind of thing. but at the same time, I wanted to really talk about, you know, him as a man. And share that with people to know that he wasn't just so-and-so's older brother or the father of so-and-so. And that bothered him, you know, all his life that really bothered him. And I saw that and I felt it. And it was something really sad to me that he, you know, I would always say, you're so much bigger than that, Dad. You're so much bigger than a movie. You're so much bigger, you know, than the things that bother you. And to see that happen, you know, and I knew it was going to, I was like wondering what he's feeling, you know. But the fact that I got to do some stuff beforehand, it makes it easier for me. So I'm grateful to, like, having a, you know, an outlet. And I did it sincerely. You know, I wasn't doing it to really, you know, publicize myself in any way, though I have been accused of that's what I was doing. But, hey, so what? You know, if that's what you think.
Yeah,
but
there will always be people that do that no matter
yeah.
what.
I think actually it was a celebration of him, and it was sincere, and it was great because a lot of people, his old students from Long Beach State, you know, were contacting me and saying, wow, you know, there's so much they can say about him, and it gave them a place to do it. And you know, for me, it was a rough 3 weeks because it was weird. I mean, in the first week, I was nearly killed in a car accident, and I was very fortunate to have a minor concussion. And then exactly a week later, my father dies of a massive heart attack. And then exactly a week after that, my puppy Larry, who's 110 pounds, jumped the fence and was impaled. And luckily, he was hanging there. You know, impaled. It made me think of, you know, the Holy Grail and Parsifal, but I'll get into that another time. But anyhow, but he's okay. So all three things, it was like if it just been a split second differently, it could have been even more negative, you know. So, you know, I mean, I wasn't killed. My dad's, you know, passing was immediate, you know, so the suffering, who knows, but I mean,
yeah.
it was immediate. And, you know, the dog, if it was 1/8 more, over,
I can't believe your dog survived that.
Yeah, he was in 11 days in the vet. But it's, you know, it's hopefully that's it now, right? Three things, and then I'll have a little reprieve for a while.
Yeah, they say it comes in three. Well,
right.
I wanted to start along that theme because I saw that you'd written a blog post. It was very touching, and it sounded like your father might have been one of your personal heroes or one of the people that inspired you to go down this path. And so I wanted to get a sense of who, whether, you know, whether it's him or others that have been kind of your personal heroes or inspirations along the way in taking the path that you have.
Yeah, you know,
you could have gone so much more commercial. I mean,
yeah,
you have the talent.
Yeah, I could have, and that is true. I mean, like my dad,
and you still could,
my
I mean.
dad would always say to me, you know, it's easy to make a lot of money. You know, I mean, it's easy. You know, if that's what you want, you know, you do these things, you can make a lot of money. But that's not what we're about. And so, I learned from him the importance of being a teacher, and the importance of using your mind, the importance of art. I definitely learned that from him more than anybody. And but I learned, you know, from my uncle, you know, in terms of how to use that in a way for your own art, your own creativity. And my dad did that in his writing, and he did it. But for me, his greatest art was teaching. He was a phenomenal teacher, and every student will tell you that.
Yep.
And that's, and to me, that's the most noble thing you can be as a teacher. But I guess what I'm saying is that I learned from him on that. I've learned from Francis and how you stay focused and you can use that, and you're incredibly dedicated to what you're doing. And, you know, there's differences there. I mean, he went to a whole other degree, but he's, you know, made some of the most brilliant films of all time. And so I'm proud of him and seeing that. But, you know, really the thing that people have to realize is you yourself, you know, I mean, I was an interesting kid, you know, I did seances, I did puppet shows, I was making little movies, you know, I was selling acorn jewelry, you know, at age 7, you know, on the, you know, all this stuff. And so that you yourself are also your guide. And that was always my big thing, was that I always felt I had to have mentors. I was a nobody without a mentor. And then I studied with Barney Childs, who was probably one of the most influential people I had. It was Aaron Copland's main pupil. You know, I got to meet John Cage and Philip Glass and Steve Reich at the school I went to. And his whole thing was, write what sounds good to you. You know, be yourself, really, you know. And this guy was, you know, an Oxford, you know, scholar and the whole thing. But he was so down to earth, you know. He was so down to earth, and I loved the man. I mean, he just he made me very excited, and he really celebrated my imagination. I mean, with a lot of academics, you know, you're in a different world. You're in a different echelon. And and my dad was in that world as well. And so, but you know, Barney for me was like, you know, he's a guy you can go to Denny's with, you know, and have a fried egg and you know, talk about Stravinsky. And that was very influential for me. I think that's what really helped me kind of get out of my head a little bit and bring it down to earth. And so I would say he's a major part of my upbringing. And then George Cuchar, you know, my film teacher at the San Francisco Art Institute, you know, I learned from him because he just is what he is. I mean, he's a wacky, incredibly intelligent, wacky, sincere filmmaker who has no need to make a point. He just does what he does, and that is his point. He's not even trying to make a point. So that was very educational to me. So, you know, there's all kinds of influences, and I think the main thing is to realize that you yourself are your own mentor, and sooner you can trust yourself, and not, it's not ego, it's not that kind of thing. It's like being more in tune with what you can do. You know, you're part of the equation. It's not just I learned from my dad, I learned from my mom. They're you know, my uncle, these are my idols. It's also, you know, it's you. You know, what were you like? What are your strengths and weaknesses, and how are you learning from that? And sometimes we forget that. So that's part of what PAH's about as well, you know. I mean, it means PAH, Project Accessible Hollywood, but it means PAH for a reason, because, you know, like the old man on the hill in the rocking chair, the Mark Twain guy who, you know, he has ears for everybody. And, you know, Mark Twain said, true greatness is when you can help others find their greatness inside. And I mean, that's really what the lesson is, that we all have this incredible spirit, and we're part of the, as Jung says, the one old human being, and we tap into that, we share that, and that's what I want to help, you know, tap into myself with what I do. So, but, you know, I can talk forever, so you better shut me up.
Christopher, yeah, you're going to be out of time, and Victoria is going to be mad at me if I let you keep talking. So I thank you so much for the time and for, sharing some personal story and you know, your own personal experiences with us, because I know not everyone wants to do that, and I really hope that we got to open people up to your world and what you're about, because I think you have, you know, an incredible talent in that, and you're empowering others to find theirs.
Right.
I thank you for that, and thank you for being part of the program.
Oh, I really enjoyed it, and I'd be happy to come on again.
Yeah, that would be great. We'll stay in touch, and I'll let you go off and do whatever you need to do the rest of the day.
Okay. You have a good day.
All right. All right.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. And I want to thank the listeners of The A-List with me, Jennifer Lindsay. We hope you enjoyed the program. If so, we'd love it if you'd be so kind as to friend us or add us to your favorites here on Blog Talk Radio. Again, my apologies to those that tweeted in, especially Rich Reeder, who I didn't get a chance to actually read out his question, but I do take questions, and we try to incorporate them as best we can. Be sure to tune in this Friday, and please tweet in questions now. Our guest will be Shell Holtz of Holtz Communications and Technology, and so much more. That's, again, Friday at 12 noon Pacific. Remember, again, start tweeting in or Facebooking in your questions to my Twitter handle or Facebook page now. As always, you can keep up with the latest on this show, archives, and informational webcasts at jenniferlindsay.com. And I should also note that we will be broadcasting next week live from Le Web Conference, which is Europe's largest and one of the world's largest internet conferences. So very excited to be podcasting from there, and look for international thought leaders to be joining the program, talking about some of the same themes that we talk about here every week, influence and what it means to be online and digital empowerment and the kinds of things that we just finished talking about. But anyway, please feel free to join. In any event, thank you so much and have a wonderful afternoon.